Can you hear me? I'm Amanda Botticello. I'm from Kessler Foundation in New Jersey and Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School. And I'm very pleased to see everybody turn out this morning. And I'm going to be presenting to you on some analyses we've been working on looking at racial disparities in community participation among adults with mobility impairments. And in particular, we were trying to see if there was a possible mediation effect of differences in community socioeconomic status. Briefly, I have nothing, no financial relationships to disclose. I would like to acknowledge the funding for this project. I've been fortunate to receive funding from NIH, particularly NICHD, through a career development award to conduct this research, and also through NIDER in the Department of Education. All right, very briefly, social inclusion, as we all know, for people with disabilities is very important, and it's very below our goal for full social inclusion for all persons with disabilities of all types. We know this is low. It's been well documented. What's less well documented are disparities in participation among underserved groups. There is some evidence that, in particular, racial minorities differ from non-Hispanic whites in indicators of participation, in particular employment, healthcare utilization, and different aspects of community activities such as voter participation. Improving all of these things would definitely improve the role, or rather the lives of people with disabilities, in that we know that participation is strongly related to all sorts of health indicators in terms of functioning and quality of life. So the objectives of this project or this analysis were very specific. We wanted to further look at the gaps and document disparities in community participation by race, ethnicity among people with chronic disability, and then to further assess the role of the community socioeconomic status to explain these gaps. To accomplish this, we linked data from two large sources. The first was a longitudinal registry of persons with traumatic spinal cord injury. It's called the National Spinal Cord Injury Model Systems Database. This is a long-term database that's been in existence since the 1970s. It's been funded by Congress and the Department of Education to track long-term outcomes for persons with spinal cord injury. People are recruited from selected rehabilitation centers from across the country. And when they enroll, they consent to participate prospectively in a survey pretty much for the rest of their lives. We interview them 1 year after injury when they've returned to the community, and then every 5 years thereafter. For our community-level database, we accessed tract-level economic characteristics from the 2009 American Community Survey using the 5-year census estimates, which have the most detailed census tract data. All right, our overall sample, so we have the Spinal Cord Injury Model Systems Database, which has almost 30,000 people who participated over time, almost 130,000 records. Medical rehabilitation centers who participate in this data source come in and out of funding over time. So I worked with 10 centers who are currently funded to collect data for the database, as well as previously funded in the last cycle. So people who've been collecting data continuously since 2006. Our case selection criteria was basically they had to have completed a follow-up survey in the last decade, so from 2000 to 2012. These were adults ages 17 and older, and then finally they had to have a valid address for follow-up that we could use to link to census geographic identifiers. We had almost 8,500 cases that met these criteria, and of these, we were able to retrospectively, geographically reference about 89% of the cases. And then finally, we dropped about 600 cases who lacked complete data on key measures such as our outcomes and vocal independent variables, giving us an overall sample size of 6,981. So just to give you a visual of what this looks like, the yellow dots and red-colored states are areas where I have collaborators who help me accomplish this work. However, we had cases from all over the nation. So we had representation in all 50 states plus the district. This came out to over 900 counties, people living in almost 5,500 different census tracts, and then we had our sample size of almost 7,000 people. So this is a pretty sizable group of adults with traumatic spinal cord injury with geo-identifiers. All right, to give you an overall sense of what the sample looked like, our key predictor was race, ethnicity. We used the overall general categories that are used on the census. Our predominant group was non-Hispanic white at about 71%. And this is about in line with what we see in this population, so majority non-Hispanic white, followed by a sizable group of African Americans, about 20%, then Hispanics, and we collapsed Asian Pacific Islander with non-identified other. Spinal cord injury is predominantly a condition that affects men, young men. So our sample was almost 80% male, and this is also typical of the population. The population is young, with an average age of about 45, but it ranged from age 17 to 96. Most people were unmarried, so we only had about 35% of the folks who were currently married, and again, this is typical of the population. Low rate of marital being married. We had most of the people were fairly well educated, so we had about 50% who'd graduated high school, and another 35 who'd completed at least a few years of college. And finally, the overall employment rate was 24.3. And again, this is about what we expect to see. And I've done other work looking at variation across different states. Particularly in the Northeast, so it's a bit lower than I was expecting, but unfortunately what we expect to see overall, knowing that employment is typically low for people with chronic disability. I also looked at a few key impairment group characteristics to assess the effect of impairment severity. So we dichotomized spinal cord injury comes in various states of severity. We dichotomized this very generally into paraplegic and tetraplegic, which is impairment in two limbs versus four. These are people who've been living out in the community for a while, so the average duration of injury was about 12 years. We used the FIM scores to get at functional independence as another indicator of severity. A score of 5 means people are relatively independent, but with some support and supervision. Overall, about 23% of the sample rated their health as chronically poor. And as this is a group of people with chronic paralysis, most were primarily wheelchair users. Okay, so our method my dependent variable, S participation, was measured by the CHART, which is the Craig Handicap Assessment and Reporting Technique. Specifically, we looked at 4 different domains separately: of physical independence in the community, mobility, occupation, which is a measure not only of employment but also productivity, and social integration. CHART scores range from 0 to 100, with 100 indicating full or desired participation at the level of an able-bodied person. These scores are notoriously skewed, so they're dichotomized for this analysis at scores of 95 or higher, indicating full or desired participation. And finally, the census tract indicator that I looked at as a proxy for community SES was a log of median household income. All right, just to give a sense of the overall disparity in participation by race, I'm going to present the unadjusted probabilities for each of these domains. So as you can see here, about the probability of people reporting physical independence is about 50%. However, this does vary considerably by racial group. So we see, people who are non-Hispanic white are actually more likely to report full physical independence compared to people, particularly people who are African American or Hispanic. Looking at mobility, similarly, with the green line representing the overall probability of reporting full and desired community mobility, which is about 38%, which is what we would expect for people who are impaired, who have significant mobility impairment. But we see again that non-Hispanic whites are doing slightly better compared to the other minority groups. As I mentioned, occupation, productivity, particularly employment, is chronically low in this population. So unsurprisingly, reports of full or optimal occupational participation were similarly low at 37%, but we see that whites are doing better than each of the other groups, particularly African Americans. And finally, social integration is one positive aspect of participation where we see more people reporting optimal levels of participation at 64%, and that whites are indeed doing much better than the other groups. But the thing that I found particularly striking about this domain is that we actually see the reverse for African Americans. So we see fewer people reporting optimal participation compared to suboptimal participation. So one of the keys was to see if differences in the economic characteristics of the places that people lived could potentially be mediating some of this difference, could explain some of the racial disparity. So to accomplish this, we analyzed the data using a logistic regression with a random intercept, so a multi-level model, but really just looking at overall variation in the level of each domain. And this was to get at the fact that we had some nesting of people in census tracts. So we had almost 7,000 people, 5,500 census tracts. About 60% were one person per tract, but we did want to account for that nesting. We followed a sequential modeling strategy for each domain. So first adjusting for race, then individual covariates, and finally community SES to assess the mediation. And as I go through the tables, we're just looking at differences in the reduction of the odds ratios, comparisons of the likelihood ratio test for model fit, and finally changes to the intercept variance. So I'm not going to talk too in-depth about physical independence because overall nothing was going on. So what I found, if you look at the odds ratios between the first model and the second, is that accounting for differences in individual characteristics, demographics, and injury level factors really made very little difference in the gap, the race gap, for physical independence participation. And similarly, when I added in community SES, I found virtually no change in the odds ratios in these models. In comparison, looking at a model with mobility, community mobility as the outcome, I found that when I adjusted for the more proximal demographic differences, that this did have a significant impact on the gap by race. So as you can see, let's see if I can point to this with a cursor, the odds ratio for African American was reduced by about 45% in this model, 30% for Hispanics, and then there wasn't much difference between whites and Asians, but this odds ratio was slightly reduced. When I added in community SES, I found that the difference between African Americans and whites was further reduced by 11%, and among whites and Hispanics, reduced further by 5%. And then overall, the effect of community SES was significant for community mobility. So for about every 1 unit increase in median household income, and granted this is logged, thank you, we see a 33% increase in the odds of reporting full mobility. With occupation, I also found that individual differences did have an impact on the gap in racial minorities and non-Hispanic whites in terms of overall occupational status. However, differences in the community economic characteristics of where people lived did not. And finally, for social integration, I found that when I accounted for individual level differences, this did reduce some of the disparity. I actually accounted for all of it between whites and Hispanics, and some of the disparity between whites and African Americans. And then finally, adding in community SES further accounted for more of this difference that we have observed in the likelihood of reporting full community, full social integration. So just to sum up, overall, this analysis did yield that there are significant participation gaps by race ethnicity among adults with mobility impairments, and that community SES, or rather differences in the economic characteristics where people live, modestly attenuates some of this difference, particularly for community mobility and social integration. However, as a caveat, the influence of community SES is distal to individual demographic and impairment-related differences. There are a lot of caveats to this study. I'm going to point out what I consider to be some of the most important, and that is this analysis is cross-sectional. So we cannot disentangle things such as selection effects. I mean, people do not randomly live in the places that they live. There's a whole host of decision and resource-based factors that go into that we cannot disentangle with cross-sectional data. Similarly, we have no indicators of exposure, duration, and migration in and out of communities. This is a non-representative sample, so the spinal cord injury model systems database is clinically based, it's not population-based, and although it's geographically diverse, it's not a national survey. So you have to take these findings with a grain of salt in that they represent people who are served by very selective rehabilitation centers. And also, this is based on one impairment group and physical disability and not generalizable by any means, but hopefully provides an impetus for further studies looking at different indicators of disability. We are also limited by secondary data, so this is all done retrospectively. And finally, we can't use aggregate data to generalize completely for individual level behavior and outcomes. But I do think this makes some important contributions, particularly in understanding the gaps that exist by race, ethnicity, and also for clinical care in terms of providing us with a good indication of where we can target some of our resources and efforts. And, of course, in terms of public policy, in terms of improving our communities overall to help foster better inclusion for people with disabilities. I did not do this work alone. I have many people to thank, particularly my K99 R00 mentors. I also had 9 collaborators at different spinal cord injury model systems centers who helped me pull this off in terms of retrospectively coding past survey participants with address data. And I'd also like to thank my research assistant, Stephanie, who's a great deal of help in that as well. And if you would like more information or have any feedback, please welcome you to contact me. Thank you.